You're listening to Bigfoot Live, starring Thomas Gardy, the world's most respected authority on the phenomena known as Bigfoot. Sit back and relax as we take you on a journey into the world of the unknown. Believer or skeptic, man or woman, you will be mesmerized by real people telling real descriptions about real encounters. Fasten your seatbelts, America. It's reality radio at its finest, and it starts now.
In 1967, my whole life changed. I saw the Roger Patterson film on the Johnny Carson show. And I gotta tell you, that's the day I thought I was gonna challenge the world and go out and find this thing.
We had found like 12 tracks in the ground. I didn't want to believe it was Bigfoot.
There he is.
Did you hear that?
He's moving right now. He's moving right now. He's straight out of the tree line. He's moving to the right. See him? He's going to the right. He's going into the trees right now. Come here, look.
I'm Bob Hallmark, and I'm a reporter with ABC Television in Tyler, Longview. It's been my pleasure to be with Tom Scotty and his team tonight, and I have to admit that I was skeptical when I came out here. I thought we, at this time in our history, had the technology to be able to find one of these things if it existed. But after seeing the footprints and the dig marks in the sand and what I believe to be a very large creature running at a high rate of speed through the woods, I'm convinced I'm going to have to change my opinion on Bigfoot.
I turned, I saw this thing standing by my gator.
When I saw the actual footprints, I realized they were something special and probably Sasquatch.
When I landed on the ground, I was kind of thinking, this ain't no human being. It's got to be something else.
www.searchingforbigfoot.com.
Alice wants what you think I've seen. Something strange, you know. Sasquatch sitting on his stylish knee, and he was talking to Moccasin Joe. Well, the party they're gonna have out in the St. John's Walls. Sasquatch doing a brand new dance, and he called it the Bigfoot Stomp.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Marco Bill on the Bigfoot Live broadcast. And folks, it's that time of the week again. It's time for the Wednesday evening Bigfoot Live radio show with our host, Mr. Tom Viscardi. And now, everybody, the man who put the big back into Bigfoot, our host and renowned Bigfoot researcher, Mr. Tom Viscardi. Good evening, Tom. How are you tonight?
Well, I got to tell you how I am. Time flies when you're having fun. Could you believe this? Here it is, 6 months out of the year. In six more months, it'll be Christmas. Uh-oh, the Christmas season. Is everybody getting ready? And what do you know? The kids will be out of school here in the next couple of weeks. Or if they're some places around the globe, they're already out. And guess what happens? Summer's here. And what happens during the summertime, folks? People are out camping. They're traveling. They're vacationing. The next thing you find out, they're seeing one of our fine hairy friends crossing the road, entering their camps, seeing them up on the high mountain ridges, because it's going on and on and on, and it will never end until, as some of the scientific people say, till there's a body brought back and one of them takes it for the team. And I'll tell you what, folks, I've been doing this for a very, very long time, as you know. And, of course, the people who know me, we don't stop. We're like that little rabbit, that energizer. It just keeps on keeping on because we know the truth. We know what's out there, folks. just like you do. Those of you who have been silent all this time, those of you who've kept it harbored inside your body, inside your head, and you won't tell anybody because you don't want to be ridiculed, you don't want to be bothered, you don't want people to think that you're crazy. Well, you're not crazy. You know, every week we've been on, we're the longest running Bigfoot show, folks. We've been on the air since when? 2014, is it, or 12?
Almost 16 years, Tom.
Well, yeah. So we've been on for at least since 2011, folks. Think about that, okay? We started from nothing. We got over 4.5 million people around the globe listening to us. And there's a reason, because they are like us. We are like them, okay? When I say we are alike is because we've had these encounters, folks, okay? We know the truth. And then we know the ones that are full of shit also. And excuse me, kids, but I know that there's... we got a lot of young followers out there just coming in. And by the way, I want to say hello to Annie. See, she's out there at the teaching hospital out there at Stanford Hospital. She's an RN, and she's got two gorgeous 8-year-old girls. They're twins. I just want to hope you're listening in. You're going to get an earful tonight. I just want to put a shout-out to you and said hi. Ladies and gentlemen, I got to tell you something. You know, I've been doing this for so long, and, you know, we're getting ready. We're mounting probably one of the largest expeditions in the world starting next month, and we're going to Arizona. We're going to be at the White Mountain Apache Reservation. We're going to be up in New Hampshire where there's so much action going on, and a newfound friend, which we're going to be bringing him on pretty soon, Scott Lucas, another Paisan from New York, incidentally. He's had so much action going on up there. From there, we're going to be going down into Florida and Georgia, Alabama. We're going to be going to Oklahoma. We're going to be seeing our friends up in Montana, the Blackfeet Indians. From there, we're going to finish up. Our finale is going to be at one of the gentlemen that we're going to be talking about tonight, this Bob Gimlin. We're going to be up in Walla Walla, Washington. And we're going to be going to his door, and it's going to be me, Mr. Hieronymus, Mr. Green, and, of course, Mr. Greg Long. But you know what? Without any further ado, I mentioned him a minute ago, about this new guy. And he's new to us because he's never been on our show, but he's had a couple of radio shows and TV shows done on him. And as a matter of fact, he was also, I think, on one of the Finding Bigfoot shows, all right? Without any further ado, ladies and gentlemen, let's get out there to New Hampshire and talk to our newfound friend, Mr. Scott Lucas. Scott, you out there?
Yeah. Tom, he's there. And let me tell you something before we start. On our webpage, www.bigfootliveradio.com, bigfootliveradio.com, if you look at across the top of the menu, there's a menu on the top of the webpage.
Yep.
Go to videos. And you'll see that there's a button for Scott's news or his news story on his sighting.
Okay. So there's no PS to that. You're just letting everybody know that the show that he was on is on our website. Is that correct?
That's correct.
That is correct.
Okay. Well, hey, you're on. Hey, Scott, how are you tonight?
Very good. Up in New Hampshire, nice and cool, having a ball.
I love that. I love when it's cool, having a ball. There's so much to your stories, and it goes into such great detail, and the only one that can tell the story is you, because you've experienced it, you've seen it, your son's seen it, and all the other people out there. Here's what I want you to do, if you would, Scott. I want you to try to reminisce, go back into your coffers, and go back into the first time you've seen one of these creatures, and let everybody know that you got 100 acres up there, and let them know that it was Taft's relationship, one of the past president's estates that you live in, that you purchased, and tell everybody how you got into this crazy business and how it escalated to where you are today.
Okay.
You got the floor, my man.
Okay, mid-60s, mid-New Hampshire, Bradford. Very big farm up there. My dad was friend with the farmer, blah, blah, blah. They had a bull there that was the meanest creature on earth that I have ever seen. I mean, nothing could go in the corral except a girl cow. Many mornings we woke up and there'd be a coyote on his horn or a deer. We'd have to rip it off. I mean, this thing was mean. So that's it, mean bull. Okay, one summer, my dad wakes me up and he goes, we got to go over to the farm. He has a huge gun with him. I mean, he always had a gun, but this was a huge weapon. And we go over to the farm in Bradford, drive down the road, and my dad goes right into the bullpen. And I go, Dad, the bull's in there. And he goes, the bull is dead. And I'm like, you know, I'm not that old. I'm probably 14, 15. And he goes, and I'd never seen him cock the gun before, but he cocked the gun. In we go. We go around the corner, and this monstrous animal's head was ripped completely off. I am not kidding you. On my mother, head ripped off. I mean, me, you, and five other strong guys couldn't lift. This was a 2,000-pound animal. And the owner of the farm ran, and my dad is a World War II veteran, tough as nails. He goes, don't move. We don't know what's going on. And then about 10 seconds later, we hear, And I'm not very far, 20 yards, they're in the corn. There was a row of corn and like one row back. You could see them. You know, they were taller than the corn. These were big ones. These were 8.5, 9, whatever. We didn't know what they were at the time. My dad said they were big Indians. But they just looked at us, and my dad said, don't be scared. And I was scared. And he was so tough. He said, if you move one inch this way, I'm going to kill you. And, the, you know, the gun was down, but as soon as he picked it up, you know, like an inch, they turned and they walked away. And they all we knew, we didn't know anything about Bigfoot back then in 64 and 65. And he just told me they were big Indians, but they were big. They were bigger than the bull. They were 1,000 pounds, 8 to 9 foot tall. The face was over the corn. And all we figured is maybe one of them had walked through the bull's pen and he clipped them. And they came back with the whole gang and went, and how do you like your neck? And that's, my dad told me, don't ever tell anybody. I never even told my mother until, I don't remember the movie Legend of Boggy Creek. You might remember that one. I'm at the drive-ins down at Meadow Glen in Brooklyn. You might remember that with my girlfriend. And I had shut it off in my brain. My dad was, you know, don't say anything to anybody. And I'm watching the movie. And I see this creature, and I tell my girlfriend, I go, that's what I saw. I saw that. And she got out of the car, and I never saw her again. And that's that one. And then where I live in my farm, which is President Taft's son's big old historic place up in Deering, last Thanksgiving, my brother, I have animals, horses, goats, everything, blah, blah, blah. We're all looking out the window, and they're all looking one way behind the barn. And my brother goes out there, and he says, right behind the barn, there was one standing there. He was trying to get my goats. And he pointed the gun, and it took off. And my son Mike, who's on that same video, was down in we'll show you when you get here. He said it jumped out of a tree, and there was two babies. And he said, Dad, they were so fast. It was like a blur. It was incredible. And so I'm trying to catch these boys. You know, I don't want to hurt them really, but I want to make sure. So I'm trying to figure a way how I can say this is a Bigfoot report. So I put out food, I put out everything, but coyotes, bears, they make a mess. I'm trying to figure out how I can trick something. So I figured we'd get a box, a regular cardboard box, and I put some pizza in it and fold it. 1, 2, 3, 4, like you're a kid. Fold it over. Nice. I put it on a stump about a quarter of a mile from the house. I go back 2 days later, and it's folded. I mean, there's no children where I live. There's nothing. Everybody's got 100 acres of land. The box is folded, and the pizza is gone. And I'm like, this is nice. So anyways, 2 days later, I got a wall that you can see, you know, a quarter mile away, marking the property. And I know the wall. I've been here 25 years. And right in the middle of where you can see the best is a pizza-shaped rock that weighs 300 pounds. I'll show it to you. It's still there. 4 of us couldn't lift it. And that's another one. And then
wait. You've perked my interest. And
yep.
Forgive me for interrupting.
No, problem.
You're telling me that you put three pieces of pizza, three slices,
yep,
into a box. You folded it up like we all used to do, you guys out there. One under, one up, so it would be
yep,
flat,
yep, yep,
covered. You left it out on a stump. You came back in what period of time?
2 days.
2 days you come back, it's still folded over. When you open it, the pizza slices were gone.
Pizza slices were gone. And I'm in the middle of nowhere, Tommy. I mean, I got 4 miles myself. So.
Wow. Wait a minute. Wow. Now, you guys, remember one thing, okay? If this is a primate and they have non-opposable thumbs, you know how they can do things, how they grab things. Okay, so if it's a primate without non-opposable thumbs, it's more like a human then, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, but to have the intelligence to open the box, not just like a bear would destroy it.
Rip it, yeah.
Would, you know, bite and chew it. Was there any tear marks or anything on the box?
Nothing. Just, I thought, I was kind of bummed. I'm going, nothing touched it. And me and my son Mike went, there's no pizza in here. And that was a pretty, and then 2 days later after that.
Wait. You still got me on the pizza in the box. Now, hold on, because there's a lot of questions that my audience around the globe is going to be asking here.
Yeah.
But this is intriguing as hell. All right?
Yeah.
All right. So when you found out that there was no pizza in the box, it was folded, all the sides were folded down nice, was it also right on the stump?
It was right on the stump. It hadn't even been knocked off.
Okay, what time of the year was this?
Fall.
Was the ground still penetratable where a print could be?
No, it was starting to get cold.
Okay. But did you see any movement of something moving around the stump?
No, but
in
I get
words,
those.
The
I get those
grass,
broken.
Down,
I get
leaf,
you know that broken tree
down.
Stuff. You know what I mean?
What? I couldn't hear you.
The broken trees where they break it, like this is my territory, this is your territory, that type of thing.
Yeah.
I got tons of those here.
Okay, that's great, but I still want to stay focused on this pizza box.
Okay, go ahead.
All right. So you what did you do? Did you tell anybody?
No, I don't tell anybody anything.
Okay. So
just kept it with my son, and we bring the box home, and then you know we're stifled. And then 2 days later, I'm looking up at the wall, which I've been looking at for 15 years, and there's a pizza-shaped rock.
Now, what walls are you talking about?
I have walls all around the property. You know, a quarter of a mile, half a mile from the house.
They took rocks and stones and made walls?
Well, look, the colonists did, but I have, you know, a rock wall.
Okay, but who made this rock wall?
The pilgrims, I don't know.
Okay, the first settlers. Is what
yeah, the first settlers.
That or the Indians.
Yeah, well, whatever. But on top of this wall, which marks the property, was a piece of pizza-sized rock. You know, I couldn't lift it. It's 300 pounds. It looks like a piece of pizza.
Okay, like, is it a round circle, a slice?
No, it looks like a slice. It looks like a slice.
I'll be a son of a bitch. And it wasn't there before?
No, it wasn't there before at all. I will even show it to you.
Wow. Okay, so what did you do next?
Nothing. I just told, you know, people that I trusted so I don't lose, you know, my rock and roll job. You know, I don't tell everybody, you know what I mean? Because they think you're nuts.
Yeah, they think you're taking those hallucinatory...
Yeah, LSD.
Yeah, that or the mushrooms that are laced with that funny stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And then another one.
Give us another one.
This was when they were right when they were filming what you saw me on the TV show.
Yeah.
I got the whole film crew down there. Now I got two huge dogs. I mean, very big, Great Danes. I mean, they protect the animals and they're fearless. And I'm getting old, so I like to throw the stick. You know, I play with them all the time. Throw the stick, right? But I'm getting older, and I can't throw the stick. They run faster than the stick, so I hit them in the head. So my wife says, "Get a tennis ball." So for the last 6 months, I've been in the field. You see the field. for 6 months. I go down there for 20 minutes. I throw the tennis ball, Even if I hit him, it doesn't hurt him. And I do it for 6 months. And I think the thing is watching me. But I don't know, but I'm throwing the tennis ball. So while we're filming this thing I just did, you saw, the dogs are with us, and they're barking like crazy, like up at something in a tree. And I'm like, I don't know what it is. And finally, we stop filming, and I look up, and about 12 feet on a big tree, it's only about 5 inches around, in the fork, is one of my tennis balls. I'm thinking of that. I go, how did that get there? We're half a mile from the house. And I tried to get it out, and it was pushed in there so hard. I mean, I'm a strong guy. I couldn't get it out. I had to get a stick, and something pushed it in the wedge so I would see it. And there's no question about it. You know, I was like, they're here. They're right with us. That was pretty wild.
Wow. 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 Now, did you actually ever get to see any of the creatures?
When we were in Bradford. I didn't see it on my property. My son did.
Okay. Do you remember his story, what he saw?
Yeah, he walked down. He walks down into the woods barefooted. He's the old hippie. And he said they jumped out of a tree, and there was a big one and two little ones. And he said when they ran, they were shaking. First they stopped, and they said they shook the trees, like, and made all kinds of crazy noises. And then he said they looked at him, looked like your movie thing there, the green one. And then they ran. He goes, Dad, they ran so fast it was a blur. I couldn't, you know, but it was a Bigfoot and two baby ones.
Hold on. Let me stop you right there. Ladies and gentlemen, what Scott is talking about is our Bigfoot Lives 2, the green cover, and that's the one that won also as Best Documentary at Pocono Mountains Film Festival. And he's talking about we had something similar happen to us in Texas where one of these creatures had climbed up in the tree and made a lot of splaying noises and everything and then jumped back down, and there was two others down below. And this guy never saw this before. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. I did not see it until I saw it on your film.
Okay. And here he is talking about a similar situation almost, 1,500 miles away.
Pretty Oh, yeah.
Incredible stuff. Continue on. I'm sorry.
Okay. So he saw them, and then we went on. And one other thing I saw down there was the stump. Probably the average guy couldn't sit on it. It was probably 3-4 foot high, cut. And I have a river going through the property. Tons of, not oysters, the ones you can't eat. What do you call those shells you can't eat?
What do you mean, clams?
Mussels.
Yeah.
And right in front of this stump, like something sat down, there was a pile of mussels. I mean, it was as big as a bushel basket. Something had sat there and ate them. I mean, I'm miles from anywhere.
Wow.
And they've got lots of, when we did the, I put my pin on the map when we did it on the show, and I was at Bradford and Deering, and there was 18 on Kearsarge, which is a big mountain out here. It was pretty amazing. And I got one more, if I could tell you. It's a girlfriend of mine up here, and she's got a prominent job, and she talked to me, and she told me that she saw, but she didn't want to mention names. But when she was a kid, can I tell that story?
Sure, go ahead.
This is the Adirondacks in Canada. She was camping with her parents, and she says, I think my parents wanted to fool around. So she says, we're going to be in the tent for, 20 minutes, go get sticks and stay on the path, and we'll cook the fish later. So she's going out picking sticks, she tells me, and she's walking down the path, and coming right at her full speed is a grizzly bear. I'm going to die. This is it. I'm saying goodbye to my parents. It was a big one. She said it was 9-10 foot tall. She was about 8-10 feet in front of me. It stands up, and I'm getting covered with grizzly spit. And I'm saying goodbye to my mom and my dad. I'm going to die. And she said, all of a sudden, to my right came a huge, hairy man and clocked him. He punched him right in the nose, and that bear ran like a little baby, she said. And he just stood there and looked at me, and I looked at him, and, I was scared. But that bear, she said, took off so fast.
Hold on. You perked my interest number two now. You're telling me your dad seen this
No, a girlfriend.
Girlfriend saw this.
A girlfriend, and she doesn't want to be known.
That's all right. We'll just say an unknown girl.
An unknown girl.
Saw this. She was up on the Appalachian Trail. She was in Canada.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, she sees this giant grizzly go up on its hinds. And it's got, well, I've seen this before, ladies and gentlemen, when they start growling, showing their teeth, making those sounds.
Spit.
Like a mock charge. And you'll see a lot of the saliva coming out of its mouth and what have you. And you're telling me that a creature bigger than this thing that was on its hind legs, and did she say about how big the grizzly was on its hinds?
No, definitely. It was a Bigfoot. She didn't know what it was.
No. The grizzly, when it was on its hind legs,
yeah.
It stood up about how tall?
She said 9 feet.
Okay. So then you said, all of a sudden, one of these primates came out of nowhere, or she said, and it clocked one of the bear right in the snoot.
Right in the snoot, hot as can, and she goes, that thing dropped down and ran like a baby.
Wow.
Yep, and she swears, she goes, I didn't tell my mother. She says, look, you don't think I'm nuts. I go, dude, that's the greatest thing in the world right there. And she goes, she looked at me, and I looked at it, and I told my parents, and they told me never to say that to anyone again, and just that was you dreaming. But she goes, she swears that's what happened.
You know, I saw that, ladies and gentlemen, it's a very interesting interview that he had, and it's on our website there, and Marco Bill told you how to do it. You go on to the homepage, and what does it say, videos, Marco Bill? Well, Marco Bill is...
yes.
Having a little...
got myself muted out, Tom.
Okay.
It says videos. It's the
okay,
video
so
page.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you want to go as we're talking here, you can go on our website. That's www.bigfootliveradio.com and hit the icon there or the link that says videos, and you'll see the guy that we're talking to. You'll put a face to his voice, and this is the guy that's telling us his story.
Well, what you're going to see is you're going to see a button, and you push the button. The button says Scott.
Okay, the button says Scott, ladies and gentlemen, so press that. You'll see it.
And it'll
the thing
take
I was
you to
impressed
the...
with was those footprints in the snow. And how many were there?
A lot. I mean, in this, I have a 4-foot, you know, corral around the barn. And this thing stepped over it.
Over it.
Right over it.
Over it.
And then one of them, there was two of them, and one of them looked like he was going towards the barn. He's in the corral. And then it stops. Like something was signaling him, this guy's got a gun. Turn around. And he stopped right in the middle of the corral, turned around, walked over the fence. You can see the footprints. Goes down the hill. I mean, they don't care.
Unbelievable. Now, hold on just 1 second. Michael Green, are you back yet? Is Michael on, Bill?
No, he's not on yet.
Okay.
I got another one if you want it. Same thing.
Okay, hold on. When Michael does come back on, Bill, tell me, break into the story because I want him on. All right, what's the next story? Go ahead, tell me.
Okay, so, this is at my farm, the Taft property. This is last hunting season, which is this is where they filmed it. You might even see that on the film. They might have showed it because they were interested in this. You know, I'm a good guy. I let everybody hunt on the property because I can't eat deer meat. You know what I mean? And everybody goes down there hunting. So this guy asked me if he could hunt. I said, sure. So every day he comes in at 5 in the morning, leaves at 4. 5 in the morning, leaves at 4. So there's one day I'm working on the tractor, and he's walking backwards up the hill with the gun up, pointing down the hill, won't even look at me in the eye. He's walking backwards up the hill. He goes, Scott, keep the stand. Keep the stand. He gets in the car, and I've never seen him again. And I got the tree stand down there, $500 tree stand. He had the gun up like he was aiming. And he goes, keep the tree stand. And that was, I went down there and I, you know, there's like all kinds of crazy
You know
stuff.
Why? What, was he frightened? Did he see something? Did he
yeah, he
you?
Saw something and he doesn't even want to, you know what I mean? It was like me and you've been doing Bigfoot for years. This is his first time at like 55 years old. So he's scared crazy.
Yeah. Wow. I can't wait to get scared when I get there. Now, here's the deal. I understand you were in one of the episodes of Finding Bigfoot from Animal Planet. Is that correct?
Yep. The one with up they did in New Hampshire at the big hotel.
Tell me the story about that clown group.
I think they're all high, personally. I got pictures with all of them. And it was more of a circus, you know what I mean?
Was it scripted?
Oh, yeah, everything was scripted. I had to sign contracts just to get near them. And I became, you know, I got pictures with me and Renee, and Bobo was, you know, I don't know if I can say this, but, you know, I think they were pretty well trashed.
What about their leader, the ringleader?
What, Moneymaker?
Yeah.
He's way too happy for me. I don't know anybody that can be that happy. But anyways, you know, I got pitches. I met them all. I had stories.
The whole world's got pitches. So yeah, they like the ganja, huh?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's my theory.
Yeah. Well, listen, I want to thank you so much for sharing your story.
Hey, can I say one more thing?
Quickly, because...
Okay, really I have a book coming out. It's called Monsters in Our Backyard.
I love it. I can't
wait to see the cover, dude. It's got a Bigfoot on a plesiosaur with chupacabras and goat men and, oh, my God.
Well, you've joined the club. Welcome to the world of Sasquatch, son. Listen, just mute yourself out. We got a whole lot more show, and I want you to listen to this next guy that we're going to have on.
He's
the one that I sent you the movie about, Hoax of the Century.
Yeah. That to me is, because I always thought that one was real because of the mammary glands.
Yeah.
And you don't
think
that's
real. We're going to talk about the mammary glands, okay, the tits, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah. Thanks for the memories.
Yeah, and the guy that actually wore the suits coming up on the other side of the commercial.
Yeah.
So just mute yourself out, and you're going to be hearing Bob
right.
Hieronymus.
And then I'm going to put it on the computer and listen to it.
Okay, brother. Take care.
Buddy, stay in touch.
Be well.
Okay, right, bye-bye.
Thank you. Enjoy
hearing.
New Hampshire, yourself. Scott Lucas.
Scott Lucas.
We're going to be going out there, and we're going to find out what he's got out in that land. Let's go to commercial. On the other side, we got our start.
1967, my whole life changed. I saw the Roger Patterson film on the Johnny Carson show. And I got to tell you, that's the day I thought I was going to challenge the world and go out and find this thing.
We had found like 12 tracks on the ground. I didn't want to believe it was Bigfoot.
There he is.
Did you hear that?
He's moving right now. He's moving right now. He's straight out the tree line. He's moving to the right. See him? He's going to the right. He's going into the trees right now. Come here, look.
I'm Bob Hallmargen, and I'm a reporter with ABC Television in Tyler, Longview. It's been my pleasure to be with Tom Scotty and his team tonight, and I have to admit that I'm skeptical when I came out here. I thought we, at this time in our history, had the technology to be able to find one of these things if it existed. But after seeing the footprints and the dig marks in the sand and what I believe to be a very large creature running at a high rate of speed through the woods, I'm convinced I'm going to have to change my opinion on Bigfoot.
I turned, I saw this thing standing by my gator.
When I saw the actual footprints, I realized they were something special and probably Sasquatch.
Well, I landed on the ground, I kind of thinking, this ain't no human being. It's got to be something else.
www.searchingforbigfoot.com.
We're back.
Ladies and gentlemen, every time I hear that little ditty, it makes the hair on my neck go up. And you know what? If you listened to me right then and you heard me say it was the movie and the Roger Patterson film in 1967, which got me into this crazy business, just like so many others around the globe, and it just makes me so sad. I was heartbroken when I found out the truth, just like many of you are going to be. Without any doubt, ladies and gentlemen, and please forgive him, he's just coming off a hell of an operation, but he's agreed to come on and tell his story, and we're glad to have him. This is Bob Hieronymus. This is the guy that took two lie detector tests, passed them both. This is the guy that actually wore the suit in the Roger Patterson movie that was not taken on the 20th of October in 1967. It was taken before. And without any further ado, because I know he's not well, let's give a big warm welcome to our good buddy, Bob Hieronymus. Bob, you out there?
Yes, I'm out here.
How you feeling, buddy, first of all?
Well, a little sore and kind of achy, but I'm getting around.
Good, good. You know, at the same time that I'm going to have you on, I'm going to bring our two other guests because I want to have them in on this at the same time and weigh in now and then. Ladies and gentlemen, also in Washington, the state of Washington, the man that wrote the book, okay, the making of the, well, I'll have him tell you all about his book. His name is Greg Long. Greg, you there?
Yep, I am.
Why don't you tell, first of all, tell everybody the name of your book.
The Making of Bigfoot. The Making of Bigfoot.
Okay. And ladies and gentlemen, the reason why that's such a bold title, The Making of Bigfoot, is because it's the truth. It's that the whole thing was made up. It was contrived, okay? And it was by a few people, and he really gets into it in depth. If you don't have this book, I suggest that you get it. Where can they get this book, by the way?
I would go to Amazon.com. That's probably the best place to go. You know, they carry just about anything you want anyway. So Amazon.com, that's what I would suggest they do.
All right. And the thing I got to tell everybody out there, Bob, is that you've done some super sleuth work, investigative work. My gosh. And it just bothers me more than ever when I hear you say to people, listen to this, ladies and gentlemen, that all they had to do was go to Walla Walla and talk to the people out there and say, hey, was this guy Roger Patterson? What kind of guy was he? And, oh, by the way, was this footage for real? And they all come back and say, what, Greg?
First of all, I'm just pausing. We're talking about Yakima. You've said Walla Walla.
I'm sorry.
You said that twice tonight, actually.
Let me tell you what
happened. You're probably traveling too much, Tom.
I am. Not only that, I had some onions from Walla Walla.
That's probably why. Well, you know, what I was told once I got out there and started talking to people is, you know, everyone out here in Yakima knows this has happened, but no one's ever come into town here and asked us about the film, and so it's been sort of the local story that was there for decades. It's unfortunate. I keep hearing news reports about the public's view of journalists, and they have, you know, there's probably only about 2% of the U.S. public today that respects journalists. It's a sad state of affairs right now in the country. But back then in 1967, the journalists of that time dropped the ball also. They just picked up the story and ran with it.
Apparently they did, okay? And supposedly some of the people, and even as of today, I understand, have gotten on the financial bandwagon of the Patty film, i.e. whether it be scholars that are teaching our kids these falsities and people that are telling the untruths about this film. What do you have to say about that?
Well, you know, these are people who have utilized this film as being a centerpiece of their evidence. They like to bolster its veracity, studying it and analyzing it in different ways in order to prove to the public and to a new generation of Bigfoot hunters and believers that this is the gold standard of all evidence. Bigfoot obviously looks like this. The hair all over its body. It's got to be, inches tall and so on and so forth. Its feet have to look like this. It has to have a sagittal crest. It has to have, features that have become sort of a template for what Bigfoot is supposed to look like. I have found out since then that witnesses are reporting creatures that don't look like Patterson's creature. But it served a purpose. It still serves a purpose for many of these questionable researchers to promote their own work. So they drag it out. They lay it on the table. in front of the public and say, look, this obviously is a Bigfoot. It's been proven to be true, and so on and so forth. And so they build some credibility for themselves. They use it as a way of gaining the kind of believability that they want to have in order to promote their own research. So that's what it's become. It's become this, holy grail of Bigfootology. It's this icon and this almost like an idol that's worshipped in a shrine. And so it continues to live as a result. Of course, it's really been used to make money, really. As we've told the story lots of times on your show, Tom. Patty Patterson, of course, Roger's widow, has made hundreds of thousands of dollars from it. Bob Gimlin has made money from it. Al DiAtle, which was Roger Patterson's brother-in-law, has made a lot of money out of it. And it continues to be so. Just hearing Scott Lucas talk, there's so many other dimensions to Bigfoot than watching a creature walk across a dry creek bed, swinging its arms and looking back at you and leisurely walking off into the forest. So, unfortunately, it became what it became, and I would like to see it eventually brought down to size.
And you know what?
Which is basically, it's nothing but a guy in a Bigfoot suit.
And that's what we're going to do. Hold on. Let's get Leroy Blevins. I want his 2 cents in on this. Leroy, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, Tom.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, for those of you who don't know who Leroy is a guy who was a self-proclaimed a videographer that debunks films. He dissects a film from top to bottom. He can tell you what the film was shot with, when it was shot, how they developed it, if they developed it, and who was in the film. That's how good this guy is. He did the Zapruder film for JFK when he was assassinated. he did the Patterson film. He's also doing a deal on the Noah's Ark situation. He is our go-to guy to find out exactly what we should do and what we think that's in the picture. When you found out about Greg Long, when you found out about Bob Hieronymus, when you found out about Philip Morris, and you found out the truth, Leroy, about Gimlin and Green and Patterson, was that like eureka for you? Did you find gold that day?
No, actually, what I was trying to do is probably trying to prove it to be real, but all I found was just a bunch of films put together for a hoax to be taking place.
And that's the thing that blows my mind, because not a lot of people know that. So there's multiple shots, multiple takes, and I think, folks, Greg Long, he's so articulate, God love him, the way he says it. You know, he says, we just got to listen to Scott Lucas, and Scott Lucas told us a couple of occasions where there was a creature. It comes, and then what does it do? It doesn't just stroll off into a day's park on a Sunday stroll. It runs like hell, and you can't see it ever again. Why is it that 1967, Leroy, supposedly on that date of the 20th of October, which we know was not the truth, that this creature is like posing, going across this creek bed, and then you see the horse, jumping up like somebody shot a rifle, or it was scared of something or something. You saw that film. What was that all about?
Well, to me, it seems like an old science fiction movie. You know, back in the old days, everybody comes out with the thing, the swamp thing, and Godzilla and all that. That's what it seems like to me anymore when I watch this film. Because they're sitting there talking about riding horseback and everything else, the horse rearing up and stuff. We don't see that on the film at all. All we see is a man running towards a creature that's just strolling along, and it's got an object in his hand. Like, that creature would really sit there. Wouldn't you think it would take off when you got somebody running up on it with something, with an object in its hand? You would think, hey, that thing would have been gone, long gone. 4 or 5 steps, it would have been completely gone. But you get a minute film of this thing just walking away, strolling along like it ain't nothing.
Yeah. You know what? I'm glad you said that, because by doing that, let's bring in our star of the evening, our good buddy, Bob Hieronymus. Bob, you out there?
Yes, I'm still here, yep.
You know, Bob, I got to tell you a story, you know, and I'm sure you've been bombarded with questions over the, hell, you know, next year is 50 years, believe it or not. So, but there was a picture that Leroy came up with, and it has, how many guys in that picture, Leroy?
Oh, you're talking about the one with
They're all on horseback.
Oh, horseback? Oh, it shows Bob Hieronymus, Howard Hieronymus, Jerry Merritt, John Ballard. Let's see, John Ballard.
Gimlin. Oh,
yeah, and Bob Gimlin with the wig on. That's because he was right next to Bob Hieronymus.
Yeah. So, and Bob, let me ask you about that, about the deal with why did they have Bob Gimlin dressed up with those pigtails looking like an Indian?
He claims he's part Indian anyway.
I don't know. Did you see how long those pigtails were? Was that a wig?
Oh, yeah.
It was a wig.
He had a wig on. We were supposed to be out chasing. Somebody had spotted a Bigfoot, and then we had that tracking dogs with us. So my brother had some hound dogs that were supposed to chase deer and that kind of stuff, and we were going to run out through the brush, out through the forest out there, and act like we were chasing a Bigfoot.
Well, wait a minute. This is phenomenal. And a bell just went off in my head, folks. Listen to this now, okay? There was, I don't know, how many were there, Leroy? Six, eight? How many people were on horseback on the top of that mountain looking down?
One, two, three, four, five, six.
There's six of them, okay? Bob Hieronymus, who everybody says he wasn't in the suit, was right next to Bob Gimlin, who looked like an Indian. Is that correct, Bob?
Yeah, you can see me sitting on one of my horses, yes.
Okay, so here's my point, you know. Everybody said that you weren't around, you had nothing to do with this, you weren't in the suit, and here you are in that picture. Is that correct?
Yeah, but this was a different time, though, you know.
Thank you. You just said it. A different time. But
yeah.
This is where it was all pieced into one. Is that correct, Leroy?
Right.
Greg, are you catching this?
Oh, yeah, I think the thing that we have to remember, and the problem is this stupid film, you know, it keeps running through one's mind for 60 seconds, and you think that's it. There was all of this other filming that was going on before the Bigfoot film hoax occurred, and that picture, which is a classic picture, shows Gimlin, you know, faking this Indian tracker, you know, persona that he had. Bob Hieronymus is in it. I believe, isn't Howard Hieronymus in that picture also, Bob?
Yeah, he's on the outside of Bob Gimlin.
Yeah.
If people don't know this, Bob Hieronymus has a couple of brothers, at least. Well, you have two or three brothers, I can't remember, at least two. And Howard Hieronymus was invited to be part of this filming. And that particular filming with those seven guys on horseback was occurring in the hills up behind Tampico. And the whole point is Roger Patterson, the director, wanted them to act out as if they were chasing a Bigfoot on horseback. That was a scene that was supposed to be stitched in with the Bigfoot hoax film that was shot later in Northern California. And there's these bits and pieces that luckily Leroy has managed to find that when you put them all together, you can see clearly Roger Patterson was trying to be a movie producer. And you got to keep that in mind, the listeners of your show.
Okay, hold on.
Don't get caught up in 60 seconds. Get caught up in all the other detail that surrounds it.
Let me see if I can connect the dots here for everybody. So what I think we're saying, and correct me if I'm wrong, Leroy and Greg and Bob, of course, okay? This wasn't just that 60-second film of the creature. There was the part of the horse rearing up. There was the part of the Indian and five other guys on the hill there on a horse, making it look like they were looking for a creature. And, of course, the guys with the dogs that were baying some kind of creature. Is that correct, yes or no?
Well,
yes, and I think Bob would agree to that.
Yeah,
this was a different time before the Bigfoot film in California.
Yeah, yeah. But it was all part of this process that Roger was going through. He really didn't know how to do all of this in several takes. He had to figure out, where am I going to have the Bigfoot appear? Well, Northern California was a perfect place, at Bluff Creek, because, you know, Bigfoot was announced to the world at Bluff Creek in 1958, if you recall. That's the birth, so-called, of Bigfoot, as far as the major publicity. That catapulted John Green, Renee DeHinden into Bigfoot history, and so on and so forth. So, and Patterson had been down there before in '64, I believe it was, and he found a Bigfoot track. Supposedly, he just stumbled on it, and he made a plaster cast of it. So, Roger had to have a site where this whole creature would have been seen, and that was the place down in Bluff Creek. But he had to get this other footage, you know, this hunt, this Bigfoot hunt, this long expedition was going to go on, and he had to find his local friends to be part of that, and Bob Hieronymus was one of those local friends.
Okay, so now let's put it into Bob's court, Bob Hieronymus. Okay, Bob, tell us how it came about. How did he approach you? What did he promise you? What did he tell you you were going to have to do? What did you do? And what transpired since then?
I ran around with Bob Gimlin for a while there, and Roger came up with this brilliant idea, you know, about this Mr. Wallace down there had the construction company in the mountains there. People were stealing fuel out of his caterpillars and that kind of stuff, so he made some Bigfoot prints out of boards, like
plywood.
And then he placed those all the way around his equipment, see, to scare people. People could ever see those Bigfoot prints there, they'd take off, you know. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Roger came up with this. That's where Roger got the idea that this latest sighting was in Bigfoot, was in Bluff Creek, California, down a little town called Wetchupack, down in there. So Roger came up with this brilliant idea. He'd go down there and would make this movie. Well, they needed, so I was a pretty good sized guy then, you know, 6 foot, weighed a little over 6 foot tall, weighed 190, 200 pounds. And they wanted somebody big and strong to wear this suit, you know, and promised, you know, that I wouldn't tell anybody, you know, after we went through the whole thing. Anyway, I went up to Roger's place there, and I tried the suit on, and he showed me how he wanted me to walk. And I walked out through the pasture there behind his house a few times and with a suit on, and they said, that's perfect. That's the way we want it, you know, to look. So a week or so later, they came by and picked up one of my horses and took off for California.
Wait a minute. Let me stop you for a minute, Bob. Was the pendulous breasts already in the suit, or they weren't made yet?
The what?
The tits.
The boobs.
Oh, the boobs?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Roger had those already made by the time we got to, you know, time we got to California, of course.
No. By the time he asked you to come over and walk in the back of his pasture, were the boobs connected yet?
I think they were, and he had already done some facial features, different things to the face, too.
Okay, got you. Right. Yeah. That's right. Where Phil...
Anyway, I met him at a place in California there, and we went on up to a place where they had picked out for a camp. And above that, they had they had picked out a place, kind of a sandy a creek bottom, white sand, you know, where water had been running down through there recently, and you know, and this is the place where they wanted me to start, you know, walking with the film. I put the film on. They helped me put the suit on, and Roger said, "Now, when I tell you to start walking, you take off across here, you know, and I'll film you." Well, he said go, or Bob or somebody said go. So I took off, and I walked across there, and I got to a certain place. He said, well, turn and look at the camera. So I turned and looked at the camera and kept on going. And then there was a big tree that had blown over down there, and I jumped down in this big hole in this tree because it was hot. It was really, really hot. down there that time of year, and a sweat was just pouring on me. And I told them, I said, get this son of a bitch off me. And they come running over there and took the suit off me. Well, after all that, we went back to camp.
Wait a minute. There's a crucial part here that you're missing. Tell everybody and the listeners around the globe about when you told them about your prosthesis, the eye, the phony eye.
Well, I have a prosthesis on one of my eye. I'm buying one eye, and I had a couple of extra ones over the years outgrown, you know. So I told Roger, I said, why don't you take one of these eyes and mold it into the right side of my face. When I'm walking down through there, when I turn to look at you, that eye will be looking right straight at you. Well, he thought that was a brilliant idea. So he took a little some molding, you know, clay or something, and molded it in there. Because if you notice, anybody that's supposed to be a scientist can tell, if you look at the close-up on that face, the right eye sticks out, it kind of glares, you know, and the left eye is sunk back in inside the suit about a half inch or so.
I noticed that when the sun hits it in that footage, it glistens.
Yes.
Have you noticed that?
Everybody should notice that if they really were looking at it.
Yeah, well, that's the problem. You got to understand something, Bob. Right now, we're shocking, probably out of the 4.5 million people that are listening to us, probably 4,225,000 are saying to themselves, wow, I can't believe what I'm listening to right now. That's why I asked you to bring that up. Also, be kind enough, please, to tell everybody how many lie detector tests have you passed?
I took two lie detector tests. One here at the Yakima Police Department, a detective lie detector down there gave me one. I passed that with, you know, never missed one question. And then this says, there used to be a show on television called Lie Detector. That's F. Lee Bailey, the famous attorney who was a host of this lie detector show. Well, they called me up. I wanted to know if I'd come down there and tell them the story, you know, and see if I was lying or not. So I went down there, and this Ed Gelb, this world-famous lie detector guy, gave me the lie detector test. Of course, I didn't miss not even one of those questions either, because there's two lie detector tests that I took. But anyway, when I jumped down in the hole in that tree, they took the suit off me. We went back to camp. Roger had this film. He put it in an envelope, and it was mailed to Aldi Atlee here in Yakima. I took the film from the Cal Camp to Eureka, California, and I mailed it to Aldi Atlee here in Yakima. Well, you know, I could have, and I drove back, you know, I could have beat the film home anyway. But supposedly the film had to go to California to be developed. They said it was filmed on the 20th. Of October. Well, and then it also says that it was shown in Al Dattley's basement on the 20th of October. So how could that be?
It couldn't. That's the reason why it wasn't. Now let's bring in Leroy just for a second. Leroy, how many films have you gone through and did you work through and find out that Patterson made, whether it be him or others, that was connected to this?
Well, I went through the Patterson film.
Yeah.
Also went through the Tracking Dog film, which was John Green and Renee DeHinden. Another film by John Green was Jim McLaren walking the path of the Bigfoot. And there's another film that shows Mrs. Patterson holding up a mask.
Mrs. Patterson?
Yeah.
And was it the same mask that Hieronymus wore?
Well, actually, if you look at it, it does look like similar to what Bob Hieronymus wore. But these masks they took, it was the film was taken when it was in British Columbia.
I see. So the $64,000 question, folks, before I sign off, where do you think the suit is today, Bob Hieronymus?
I wouldn't have any idea. When I brought the film home. Day or so later, they showed up, dropped my horse off, took the suit out of the trunk of the car we had there, and that's the last I saw of the suit. Now, I don't have a clue who has the suit. Somebody said Al DeAtley had it in his house, in his mansion he lives in up here in Yakima, in a glass cage. Some people say that they took it out and buried it. Who knows? I have no idea where the film went.
Okay, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart. Tell Glenner I can't wait to come up there and see her and tell her have some of those wonderful brownies ready.
Okay.
Listen, you, Leroy, Mr. Greg Long, I don't know where we'd be without you. Scott Lucas, you're going to be a longtime friend. I feel it. Marco Bill, kudos and salutations. Till next time, America.
Well, folks, once again, it's time to say so long. We'd like to thank Mr. Tom Biscardi and his guests and the Bigfoot team for joining us, and we'd especially like to thank you, our listeners, for tuning in. This is Marco Bill saying see you next Wednesday evening for some more Bigfoot Live radio show entertainment with Mr. Tom Biscardi and his team. And until then, keep the Bigfoot live and keep Bigfooting. See you next week.
Three men with a gold and a pack that they'd hold and a promise till the day that they died. Answers to the questions no one's found before. Driving determination, the only key they had to unlock the door. Monsters, myths, and mysteries, legend, tales, and facts. Just put them together.